You're listening to Your World Today on Radio Islam International. We talk about the situation in Syria, and we're joined on the line by Bilal Abdul Karim, journalist and documentary filmmaker, live from northern Syria. Bilal, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. How's everybody there in Johannesburg?
All well, and yourself? What has changed from the last time you stayed in Syria?
Well, the last time that I stayed in Syria, which was a year and a half ago, well, as you know, in a war zone, things don't usually stay the same, do they?
Yes.
And here is no different. Of course, the rise of groups like ISIS, or not groups, or the group like ISIS, has made the people a little less friendly towards the foreign fighters as they once were. So that's very, very apparent. But after having said that, there has been lots of movement towards the groups unifying, seeing the benefits in becoming and fighting under one banner or two banners as opposed to 20 or 30. But all of that's a process. It's going to take some time, but I think the direction is there.
Yes, interesting bit of information that you share with us. Why are people who move to live under Islamic State moving back to the countries they came from?
Well, I think that a lot of the young brothers and sisters, first of all, don't trust the media. And I would say, generally speaking, rightfully so. And because they were not raised on a culture of true Islamic study. That does not mean that they didn't go to a madrasa to learn to memorize the Quran, but did they go to a madrasa to learn to read and learn Arabic so that they can read and the books of tafsir, and they can delve into the books of the scholars? A lot of them there in South Africa were not raised on that. So with a mistrust of the media and no connection to the scholars of the religion, not just those that are local in South Africa, because I myself sat with some of the scholars in South Africa, and I asked them, have you gone to Syria so that you could do a fact-finding mission so that you could adequately come back and report to the people? And I didn't get the answers that I think that the Ummah was owed, which would have been, yes, we've been there, we've spent several months, we talked to the people, and we didn't get that. So I think that they were curious. They thought that they were going to a real Islamic State because the media hated them. Therefore, they felt that that somehow meant that they were on the truth. Many times I've heard them say, use the statement of, if you want to find out who's on the truth, then look at the direction that the arrows of the non-Muslim are going in. Yeah, well, okay, you can use that, I suppose, but the reality is that if there's a rapist or a murderer, then the whole world's going to be against them, too. That's not a testament that they are on the truth. So I think they went out there, they saw firsthand, and they said, hey, you know what? This is not Islam. It's not for real. This is a cult, and I'm just fortunate, I'm happy that they were able to get out.
Yes, interesting observation that you've made in that regard. Now, looking at some of the developments over the last few days, and in particular the dust storm, how did the freakish dust storm last week open the door for Jabhat al-Nusra to take over the Abu Thuhur airbase?
They had been trying to attack this airbase for a long period of time. Over a year. And they've been making gains, and, you know, step by step, they built these or dug these huge trenches, and that helped them to get within striking distance. And I remember very, very well, this was about 2 days, 3 days before the taking of Abu Dhuhr Air Base. And I said, I want to come out there because I want to film these huge trenches that you dug. So they said, okay, fine, but can you come tomorrow because there's going to be an attack, and because of the dust storm that's here. Well, I had some filming to film someplace else, so I did not go. But that dust storm rendered the planes of the regime ineffective in holding back the Islamic fighters from getting closer to the base. So as soon as that dust storm came, right away it got to be a man-to-man, one-to-one fight. And as you can see, the result, the regime lost.
Yes. So it was about the timing of the entire strike. Last time we spoke, there was developments that all resistant groups in Syria, excluding ISIS, were uniting. Did that happen, or is it still going to happen?
Well, I don't think that this is really a thing where it's like, well, either she's pregnant or she's not. I don't really think that that it should be looked at in this way. First of all, we've got to understand something about Syria. Syria was the type of place where if there were huge amounts of garbage in the streets and the people organized themselves to clean it up, the government would come and ask who the leader of the organization was and arrest him and hold him for a period of time. As a message, you don't organize yourselves, we organize because we are the government. And that's the way Syria had been for many, many years. So it was not realistic that everybody was going to fight under one banner just like that. And as everybody saw, there were so many different groups and such like that. Here recently, you see groups, particularly like Jaish al-Fat, which consists of seven different groups, which are Faylaq al-Sham, Ahrar al-Sham, Jabhat al-Nusra, Jund al-Aqsa, and there are three other groups that make up the whole bunch. Now, with all of that together, this signifies a real shift in the way things have been done over the past 4 years. But to say, has it happened, like, did we cross the barrier yet? No, I don't think we should look at it like that. I don't think we can look at it like that. But can I say that there is continual progression? Yes, I do see that. And I think that there will be more good news for the Ummah in the coming days. Of course, good news for the Ummah if you're not rooting for Bashar al-Assad and his murderous regime. But I think that there will be some more good news in the future because more groups are going to continue to say, hey, look, let's all get together. Let's try to see if we can work together with this thing. I'm seeing it more and more every day, but I can't say that, you know, that we've crossed the threshold. We're definitely heading in that direction, inshallah.
You traveled to the countryside of Aleppo so that you confirm or deny that ISIS had been shelling the town of Meira. What did you find?
Well, first of all, when I went there, I did find that the local people there were very hostile to us. They were not happy to see us. They thought, and I could understand exactly why they were not happy to see us. There are daily car bombs in that village area. Let me pause for a second. Let me let you guys drink this in. There's a car bomb in Johannesburg. It's going to be top news around the country and throughout most of Africa. I said one car bomb. What about a daily car bomb in a place the size of, we'll say Alexandria? And I mean, you know, I want people to understand what is the magnitude of this. So when me with my brown face showed up, they thought that, oh, whoa, ISIS has come to town. Because ISIS was just 500 meters from the area that, from just outside of the town from where we were. So they were not happy to see us. But once we got there and we started to move around and we started to do some of the work, they loosened up a bit. And basically what we found is that, number one, there are no regime troops within 40 kilometers. Now, if there are no regime troops within 40 kilometers and we look at the shells and the chemical weapons that are still oozing from them, it's a hard sell that there was anyone else who would have done this chemical attack. Now, you could say that they did it to themselves, which doesn't make a lot of sense. or the only enemy in that area is ISIS. Now, one of the things that ISIS will say is fight them the way that they fight you. But the reality is that this village is a Sunni village, and they had no chemical weapons. So it's unfortunate that even some Americans, some British, and some South Africans fall under the rhetoric of these murderers, and I'll just say it plainly. But alhamdulillah, there were some of the good brothers and sisters that said, hey, you know what? This is not what we thought it was to go home.
Yes, I can imagine what it must have been like for you. Looking at other aspects of Syria, what happened to Syria's healthcare sector?
Well, Syria doesn't have a healthcare sector right now, at least not in the sense that you would think in as a functioning country would have. There's nothing central about the healthcare situation. Actually, we were at a hospital today. We're producing a report that should be out in the next 2 days, inshallah, about the healthcare situation. Basically, there's been what you call a brain drain. Many of the members of the healthcare sector have gone to Europe or they've gone to other places, and basically they've left the people behind. Now, I know a lot of people are going to say, hey, look, Bilal, that's harsh because I wrote an article and people read me the Riot Act, and that's fine. At least we've established a dialogue, so I don't mind to play the villain sometimes. But then we have to look at the realities. The realities are this. When a child gets sick, who's supposed to take care of that child? Well, every doctor's going to look at each other, and they're going to say, yeah, that's right, somebody should take care of them, but it's not going to be me because I'm in Germany. And the other one's going to say, well, it's not going to be me because I'm in Italy. Okay, well, that's fine in the general sense. But when that child has a mother who's looking at her child go down and down and down on a daily basis because there are no doctors, somebody is blameworthy. And that's just for real. As I said, that we're producing a report now, but the realities of the situation is that these hospitals, some of them don't even have doctors. I'm going to say this again. I want all of your listeners to listen to this. Some of these hospitals don't even have doctors. The only thing they have are nurses. Some hospitals are little more than a storage unit for the injured. So they may have emergency health care. For example, if you go in there, you've got a gunshot wound or gash on your head, they've got that. But what happens after that? Even me, myself, I was shot in my hand, and most of my health care came the first day that it happened, and it broke one of the bones in my hand. But after that, there's virtually no one to follow up. No real physical therapy. Basically, my physical therapy is what I'm reading on the internet and what I'm just doing on my own. So I'm playing my own doctor here. And if that's the way it is for me, like I went to one physical therapy session yesterday, but that was the first one that I had been to. What about for the rest of the people that are here who don't have access to the internet, who don't have the wherewithal to be able to quote unquote treat themselves if that's what I'm doing and all? And am I going to get full use of my hand? I don't know. It depends on how good the YouTube videos are. And that's where we are.
It's really, really sad. Bilal, we appreciate you chatting to us about all these various issues and giving us great insight as to what's happening on the ground. We look forward to chatting to you in coming days and taking the discussion further.
That would be just fine. Might I have just about 15 seconds?
Yes,
to say something
for sure.
Before we go?
Yes.
I'd like to say to the people that are there in South Africa, if you're a doctor and you've got some medical experience, don't allow the people to tell you that Syria is just a big fitna and that you don't need to do anything to help these people. All they need are a few dollars and some dua. They need medical doctors. People who can come here to treat these people who are injured, these people who are sick. We need people who can keep themselves under control and have some sympathy for the people, because that's what the Syrian people need. If there's anybody out there that might be willing to do something like that, they could come officially I know the people who could arrange them to come officially. I even know the hospitals that they can work out of. And it would be great to have them, and I'm sure the Syrian people would be very appreciative, because I wouldn't want people's health care to continue to be like my health care is right now, where YouTube is my doctor.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala grant you complete shifa, Bilal, and grant all those suffering in Syria speedy recovery and also alleviate their plight. Jazakumullah khair. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
This is Bilal Abdul Karim, journalist and documentary filmmaker, speaking to us live from Northern Syria and giving us interesting perspective on what's going on in Syria.